Well, it looks like Governor Tim Walz is going to run again. Welcome to Drive Time. It's Jason. Just within the last half hour, the Minnesota Star Tribune has published a new interview that they did this morning with the current governor. And the quote, "If we run again, we will win." Governor saying that he feels confident that he's not going to face a nameless Republican. He's going to face his quote. He says it will be one of theirs who will bend the knee to Donald Trump. And it will be this bill tanking the economy and Donald Trump having done more stuff. Walz says, if we run again, we will win. I have the capacity to ramp up a campaign that will be bigger than anything that they would see. It does go to something we've talked about often on this show. And that is that in politics, it is always about who is the opponent. So in theory, do I think the best thing for Minnesota would be for Governor Tim Walz to run again? Well, is this an abstract question or is this a what's the other option question? Right? Because this isn't like going to Best Buy and you could decide to buy a TV or not. You have to buy the TV. So who do you want? Do you want Tim Walz for a third term? Do you want whichever Republican will run against? I do think there are some Democrats who would be strong candidates. But I see why the governor would make that calculation the way he is making it. Because let's be real. Let's look at the Republican candidates who have stepped up to run for any statewide office, for U.S. Senate, for governor, hasn't exactly been the all-star team. So that story just coming out within the last half hour in the Star Tribune. Let's do the D-Rush Hour News headlines.
Now time to get you caught up on some of the biggest stories of the day. These are the DeRush Hour headlines.
Good evening. Our top story.
This just in.
Our top story.
We begin tonight.
We begin with the lead.
And we start with the end of the bromance. The Trump-Musk era is over. And over the weekend, in reaction to the big part of the bill that President Donald Trump calls the big, beautiful bill, Elon Musk said, I'm out. It is time for a new party. A new political party. And he filed paperwork with the Federal Elections Commission to create the America Party. Interesting that Elon Musk could not run for president as he is not born in America. But he's got the money to put behind a third party. Our guy, Chris Cillizza, with a Substack called So What and a YouTube channel under his name, explains why he thinks this Elon Musk America Party won't work.
I think it is at least a 50-50 chance, and probably better than 50-50 chance, that Elon is just talking, right? If Elon puts real, first of all, forms a actual party with the Federal Election Commission, step one. Step two, funds said party. And not just funds it, but hires real serious people to be involved. And then starts, and I would argue you got to start lower. He's starting at the Senate and House level. That's better. Most third-party efforts start at the presidential level, doomed to failure. Start at the state legislative level. Get a few people elected to the America Party. Have a platform and build to it. You don't start in the major leagues. You start in the minors and you build up to the majors so that you're ready when you get there. Now, again, do I think Elon is actually going to do all those things? I mean, he's the richest man in the world. He could do what he wants, but I think it's unlikely, right? I think he's very mercurial, for lack of a better word. He kind of says and does lots of things, or says a lot of things and does less of them. He did put $290 million behind Republican candidates and Donald Trump in the 2024 election. And again, I keep saying, richest man in the world, so you can't totally discount it. But building a party is not a top-down thing. It really is a ground-up thing. And that's what I think all third parties have missed, which is you've got to figure out how to get people elected at the state and local level, state legislative, city council, et cetera, before you talk about House, Senate, and certainly the presidency. And then again, once you get anyone elected anything or you think about trying to get someone elected, you do have to deal with the fact that your third party is not my third party, and your third party candidate and belief system is not what I might want as my third party candidate and belief system. So it looks good. You look at these numbers, 43% of people say they're independents. 58% of people said a third party is needed. Yes, in theory.
In theory. That is the key challenge for sure. We'll see if this is just talk, as Chris speculates, or if it turns out to be something more. Next up on the D-Rush Hour news headlines is the continued fallout over the absolute tragedy in Texas, where the death toll has now passed 100. This incredible storm came so fast and so furiously. It made us wonder about overnight warnings. And are we doing enough as people sleeping, as people in our own homes, to receive these warnings in the overnight hours? We spoke with meteorologist Chris Vigasky for the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
It really is. You know, the overnight is kind of a worst-case scenario. We see the most tornado fatalities. We see the most flooding fatalities at night. People are asleep, or if they are out, they don't see the tornado. They don't see the water coming over the roadway. So it's especially important to be thinking about what are we doing for these overnight events. And one thing that is always recommended is to have multiple ways to receive that warning information. Things fail, and nothing is perfect 100% of the time. Your phone, you may have thought you plugged it in, and the plug didn't work, and now your phone's dead, and you don't receive anything over the phone. So you need to have a backup option. So, you know, it's always about thinking of, what am I going to do? Yes. So, you know, pay attention to things throughout the day. Know if there's going to be severe weather overnight, or if there's a chance of severe weather overnight. Get your phone charged before you go to bed. Have that weather radio and have that program to turn on if a warning is issued for your area. Know what you're going to do if a warning is issued for your area. Because if that alarm goes off and wakes you up at 1:30, 2 in the morning, you're going to spend a little bit of time waking yourself up before you know what's going on. So if you have that plan in place, you're not trying to develop a plan while you're groggy and while you're trying to figure out what's going on.
That is Chris Vigasky. It is something that I think we all need to think a little bit more about as we come forward. Next up, there was quite a bit of conversation at the end of Taste of Minnesota this weekend. What a weekend it was for this free festival right in the heart of downtown Minneapolis, because record crowds, record attendance, and some disappointed that they weren't able to get in. It is bringing up questions, and these are good questions, I think. Questions about, is this spot big enough? Let's go to one of the organizers from Taste of Minnesota, who is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Josh Vosburgh, who is with us to talk a little bit about that. First of all, Josh, congratulations on what a massive event. How many people downtown do you think?
I want to say at least 100,000.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been huge. It's been huge.
It was incredible.
Yeah. What's your thought as far as, I mean, is this thing maturing to the point where maybe it does need a bigger main stage type area?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. You know, our hope for, you know, this is our third year back, and every year we just try to improve and make the experience better for every single attendee. It's a free event that we want everyone to come and attend. After last night, it's incredible the attendance we had. It's incredible that people came together for, you know, a weekend to come see some music, some food, and, you know, some art, and just experience like downtown life together as, you know, as a full state.
It was, I mean, I loved it. I was there both days. 60,000 people on Saturday, 75,000 people last night. And I think, I mean, a lot of it, ludicrous, filled.
Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that, Dan, can I play a little bit of Ludacris?
And Dan, could you talk some more about not only the energy?
Hang on there. I got too many buttons up. I was so excited to play some Ludacris because, like, why not? Here. Ridiculous. I mean, come on. You know, it's ludicrous.
You can't go wrong.
No. There is something about a certain age group, right? You had Cheap Trick and Joan Jett, and then last night to have Ludacris. It is, like, this is designed right for me. You're saying, right, let's get the 50-year-olds and the 40 to 55-year-olds. This is our sweet spot, I think.
Right, like Cases, it just has something each day for everybody. Like yesterday, for instance, I've never seen a more diverse crowd in my entire life of just coming together for one artist, you know? So it was absolutely amazing. I couldn't have asked for a better day. The attendance was amazing. But again, just all the diversity, just coming together to see Ludacris was just mind-blowing.
For sure, like, you know, you never want to turn people away.
Absolutely.
But I guess it might be helpful for people who don't, like, fully understand how the ticket situation works. Could you explain that? Because you could get a ticket, but, like, it wasn't exactly a regular ticket.
Correct. Basically, before the event, go online to get a ticket, quote unquote. The ticket is basically just saying, hey, I'm coming to Taste of Minnesota. It is a completely free event that we want everyone to experience without having to pay for anything. We had Metro Transit providing free rides as well. So it was just like we really wanted to make an experience affordable and available to everyone. I will say the number one thing that we will always consider and be at the top of our mind is everyone's safety. So with that, I mean, we were expecting and hoping to get a record number of attendance, but closing down the entrances just to keep everyone safe was a priority to make sure, again, just the safety of the crowd, safety of the entire event. It's incredible that we had to close down the entrances because that was our hope from the very beginning to 3 years ago. And now coming to see, how we've done each year and to just improve and improve, I think people are noticing that we really are trying to make an experience that's, available to everyone.
Yeah, the fact that it's free is sort of mind-blowing. It's really cool. Good stuff. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
We'll figure it out, right, next year if there are ways to do it.
Yeah, we'll see you next year. Fourth of July is on a Saturday next year, so just expect bigger and better surprises.
Good stuff. Josh Vosburgh, Taste of Minnesota. We appreciate you. Thanks, Josh. That is page one, the lead. Next, page two. Lots of good stuff in the D Rush Hour news headlines, page two, including the Minneapolis City Council setting a minimum price for vapes. What do you think about that? And an adult playing with Legos, doing really cool stuff. That's next. D Rush Hour news headline starts with the Minneapolis City Council saying they might set a minimum price for e-cigarettes at $25. Money. Fox 9 reporting on this, that the city council could act on this as early as Thursday. As early as Thursday. How about that? This is a significant price hike. According to the city, right now the current minimum price for a single disposable e-cigarette is about $9. So they're looking to go to $25. You got to be 21 to buy an e-cigarette from any shop in Minnesota. City Council also looking to restrict new shops that sell tobacco from being located within 300 feet of schools. Doesn't include current. That would be for new shops. Significant price rise. I have mixed feelings on whether or not the government should be setting. If you want it, just ban it. If you want to ban it, ban it. I don't love all this. Like, let's mess with people's business so badly that we try to screw them. Just ban it. Have the guts to ban it would be my. Or just butt out would be another option. Most of us stopped playing with Legos when we were kids.
Lego sets, the gift that always clicks.
Minnesota Star Tribune reporting on Jeff Esler. Jeff started working on Legos when 2016. That's when he really started coming into his own. He created a miniature version of Nye's Polonaise Room, including the sing-along piano player in the world's most dangerous polka band. If you're watching on YouTube right now, you can see Jeff's brick model of Matt's bar, which is on display above one of the booths in Matt's bar in Minneapolis. This is both crazy and cool. He's done Lego dioramas of Glick's, the Monte Carlo, Riverview Theater, Grain Belt Beer Sign, Nokomis Beach Coffee Shop. Here's the Split Rock Lighthouse made of Lego bricks, which is on the dining table of his Minneapolis homes. What should he do next? He said he played with Legos like crazy growing up, but when they introduced more adult targeted kits, he's really gone crazy with it. Pretty fun. IDS Center, some people say. I don't know, it's kind of plain, isn't it, the IDS Center? He's thinking about St. Paul Schmidt Brewery, which is pretty cool. They may be down to their last out. Talking about the St. Paul Rookies. Fast pitch. Catherine Kovalenko in the Pioneer Press reporting that the Summer Travel League softball for girls is likely done. They've hosted girls from St. Paul and the surrounding area for more than 40 years, but they couldn't put together a 2025 team because only a few players signed up. What's happening to the kids? Well, as they get older, high school girls are often joining club teams that are more expensive. You know you can find JH and Sons at the Galleria in Edina, but soon you may be able to find a brand new car. That's a very quiet new car. Little sort of the windup there was really destroyed. It's an EV. Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal reporting about a Rivian dealer likely to set up shop inside the Edina shopping mall. Rivian has done this around the country. Sort of like Tesla has some traditional dealers now. This will be more like a couple cars on display. You'll be able to test drive, but then you buy it custom built and shipped from Rivian's factory in Normal, Illinois. Speaking of cars, who do you think has the most American car on the road? America. Yeah. America. Cars.com has something called the American Made Index. They looked at 400 different vehicles on the road with a 2025 model year. Number one, Tesla Model 3. Number two, Tesla. Number three, Tesla. Number four, Tesla. Number five is the Jeep Gladiator. Number six is a Kia, the EV6. And then a couple of Hondas, the Ridgeline Odyssey and Passport. The Volkswagen ID4 rounds out the top 10. You notice what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the top 10 are? EVs. Mostly assembled in America, but with a lot. They include where they're made, the percentage of U.S. and Canadian parks, factory and employment, and the location of assembly. Pretty interesting stuff. So, there you go. That's the D-Rush Hour News headlines. The lead in page two. When we come back, Dave Schwartz on the controversy over who didn't make the All-Star team next. And Dave Schwartz joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Dave, I hope you had a good weekend. What did you do for the 4th of July? How was it?
It was good. You know, we went to, we did the Minnesota thing and went to a lake.
Nice.
We had to go to two lakes because we went out in the afternoon. The first lake that we went to, there was nowhere to park. If anyone was on Lake Waconia this weekend, congratulations. We could not find a place to park, so we had to go to a second location, and we went to Lake Minnewashta, which was great. We hung out.
How were the fish? Fish bite?
How were the fish?
The fish?
We didn't fish that day. No, we just let the kids swim, and they jumped off the lily pad, and we had a great time. But we didn't fish much. We fished other days, but not on actual July 4th. We took the day off and just swam. It was too windy. It was crazy wind.
I was at Ludacris last night, A Taste of Minnesota.
Wow.
Yeah.
How was that, by the way? Does he Can he still put on a show?
He does. He was very entertaining. And I will say, like, off the top of my head, I would have guessed that I knew about two or three Ludacris songs. And last night, I just, it all came rushing back to me. Like the,
oh, sure.
The early 2000s, like, unbelievable.
Well, he doesn't have any new stuff.
No, I don't think so.
Playing the new stuff. At this point, he's playing the hits, and that's the jam, right? I mean, it was a more
innocent time when you could have a song called I've Got Hoes in different area codes, and it was fine. It was fine. Today, there'd be like think pieces written about this, right?
It would be. I don't know if I'm ashamed or not ashamed to say that I actually do know every word to that song. And every time my wife asks me about, inevitably, what's the area code for something, I launch into song. True. She's rolling her eyes, I'm sure. Yes, it's every time.
He adapted it with a 612, 651, and 763 reference, which I thought was sort of stunning and very impressive to me. I was impressed.
He's a performer.
I mean, rough break for the 952, but, you know, you guys are used to that in that part of our metro.
We have Cisco, though. So, like, Cisco's on the west side.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's working on a remake of the thong song to get 952 in there.
I was loudly singing along with the song that I didn't know the title of it until I looked it up later. But it's there's a reference to licking from your head to your toes. And that was I'm like, oh, I know this whole song. And Alyssa next to me is like, what is happening here? I'm like, oh, just the spirit of Ludacris kind of infested my soul. I couldn't help myself.
She's never been prouder to be married to you, I'm sure.
Oh, gosh. And part of me is thinking, like, other people at this show are like, is that Jason DeRusha yelling out, I want to lick, 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 lick you from your head? It's just,
yep. Yeah. And they're thinking how cool you are, and they're going to tune into the show today.
Yeah.
Just
CCOM, we are your leader.
You're going after the younger demo.
The Luda leader, for sure, is what we are.
Yeah.
Sadly, I did watch the Minnesota Twins kind of lose it in extra innings, which frankly, their play this weekend would not, losing that game would normally not be a concern, other than the fact that it's been such a tough first half of the season. They've got to be stripping this thing for parts, don't you think? I mean, I just don't see any other choice.
I mean, the rumors are out there. I've read them. I'm sure others have had about Byron Buxton and people. There's interest in him.
He's not going anywhere, though, right? Like, come on. I don't think so.
I couldn't imagine. That would be that's stripping the steering wheel away from the car. Just doesn't make any sense at this point. Of course, people are going to have interest in him. You know, again, it's still so. They would be sellers, I think, if the deadline. If they certainly will be buyers at the point at the deadline if they want to. But overall, I mean, there are, you know, not knowing every contract situation on the team, you're going to look, of course, but there still is, and I mean, I don't think people really stop to think about how much is in flux though right now in this organization is the fact that they're still looking, you know, whether they're going to sell the team or not. They're still looking for their owners.
Right.
You know, and that does, when you get into these decisions that have to deal with money, and, you know, you kind of need to have that blessing to make any big moves. So I would be very surprised if anything huge happens. But I'm sure if someone's calling, they are picking up the phone. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind. But when you look at the Central, though, I mean, even as bad as things have been, they're still only five games out of the AL Central lead. Detroit is only five games ahead of them. So it's still like we look at it and we think, oh, gosh, the season's been a complete wash. They're throwing them down sacrifice bunts to win games.
That was pretty cool. Come on, that was pretty cool. That was a neat
moment.
It was
amazing. It was amazing. Excuse me. They're 13 and a half games back. I was looking at the wild card number. They're in second, but 13 and a half games back.
Yeah. I mean, the Tigers are running away with it. But yes, we're still like within reach of a wild card spot.
Within reach of a wild card spot, which, so I, you know, I don't know if you strip everything down or not, but, you know, it's just been kind of this weird season. I mean, you look at the rest of the Central, they're not all that great either. I mean, this is basically like Detroit's just running away with this right now at this point of the season.
Yeah. All-star decisions are making news in Twin City sports. Buxton, the only all-star for the Twins, probably right when your record is 43-47. Although, Joe Ryan, far as a pitching performance, I would have liked to see Joe in the mix. He's had a great first half of the season.
I think his numbers deserve it, but I think you're 100% right that when you are four games below 500 on the season, it's almost impossible. We've seen it before where the Twins have had players who were definitely good enough, but they're way out. You're not going to see a team with three all-stars if you're below 500.
Yeah.
More than likely, though, at the end of the week, I'm sure Joe Ryan, maybe DeRyan's going to get added as injuries and those kind of things start to happen. My guess is Joe will find his way into the game somehow, but I do agree. I mean, his stuff has been consistently good most of the year. That hasn't been easy when you've been a Minnesota Twin this year to do something consistent. And so I think, you could make a real good case for what he's done to be an all-star right out of it. But my guess is he'll probably get added as some sort of replacement by the end of the week.
Lynx have sort of the Minnesota Lynx, I think, have a better case as far as complaining about their all-star selections. Now, basketball, it's always strange. There are not that many people who make the all-star team. Still, the Minnesota Lynx are by far, their record is unreal. They're leading the WNBA. Mm-hmm. And to only have two players selected, Courtney Williams and Nafisa Collier, mm-hmm. I think, is this just the other coaches don't like the Lynx or don't like Cheryl Reeve? Because I think that's who picks in the WNBA. It's the coaches, right?
Yeah, that's a really good – I don't know, but you're right. As soon as you started saying that, I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, you could absolutely make a case for a number of different players. Kayla McBride could be one. I mean, there's certainly – when you're 17-2,
right.
Only have two all-stars is pretty silly. And, I don't know what the politics at play is. I know I would be surprised if anyone actually – willingly wanted to go against Cheryl Reeve because she can be tough. So I can't imagine that, but it is a little surprising that when you're that good and that dominant, I mean, they're 17-2 and you mean to tell me only two of their starting five are all-stars? Give me a break. And that's an absolute joke in my mind. And it doesn't help the league at all. When you do things like that, because they deserve to have more. And at that, at their record, you could put all of them in. The entire starting five
honestly,
for the All-Star team could be the Minnesota Lynx.
Yeah, and I get, each team has to have a representative. And this will get even harder as the WNBA expands. But with the limited number of teams there are, I don't know. It seems preposterous to me.
Well, and what's interesting is that the Lynx, guess who else has two All-Stars? The Washington Mystics, who are 8-10.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous to me. That is just egregious to me that you would have the same amount of all-stars as a team that is two games below 500 when you're 17-2.
It's goofy. Dave Schwartz is with us. Dave, there another article I saw this weekend talking about what's going to happen with the Timberwolves and Lynx and where they'll play and what that is going to end up looking like. I think nobody really knows. The betting money for me is that it will stay in downtown Minneapolis. But from a real estate standpoint, I understand why some people are starting to think, I wonder if this goes out to the suburbs.
Well, the Vikings tried. Remember when they built U.S. Bank Stadium, they were very, very close to some land up in Ramsey County, and ultimately they ended up staying where they were.
Arden Hills.
You want it. I mean, when you're a major team like that, you're in the city. I mean, that's what you want to be. You want the traffic. You want other places around. However, from an ownership standpoint, it always makes more sense, and it did. The Vikings did this in terms of their practice facility of getting into areas where you can also develop the land around that, because that's where you make your money, not just on the stadium, but the hotels that are nearby and the parking that's nearby. And I mean, you look at what the Vikings have done out there with Vikings Lake and all the different streams of revenue that are coming in. I mean, that's kind of a great blueprint. So I still think I'm with you. I still think it feels weird not to have a Minnesota, Minneapolis team in the Twin Cities, but we've seen it before, and the Vikings were really close before they got their, you know, before they got what they wanted to be in downtown, and for whatever reason, it just didn't work out. So I wouldn't be surprised if they at least look before settling, if they do settle back in Minneapolis.
Sounds good. Dave Schwartz, appreciate you. Always enjoy chatting on Mondays. Thanks for being with us.
Next time, I would like you to give me the entire set list of Ludacris, please, so I can hear exactly what songs you know and which one you don't.
That's fair. That's fair. Next time, I'll do it. I promise. Back in just a minute here on Drive Time. All right. I hope you're following us on social media, because then you would understand what that audio was a reference to.
That was so creepy.
Incredibly creepy. If you follow me on Instagram, I did repost Greg Swan's Greg Explains the Internet segment with me, where he showed Gabbo, a ChatGPT powered plush toy. And that's what was giving sort of the recap of me. Now, I haven't checked in a while. I told you what my kids got me for Father's Day.
Yes.
It is a
refurbished Wikipedia page, right?
Right. So like I wonder, it still exists.
How well do your kids know you?
So Wikipedia, if you Google it, Jason DeRusha Wikipedia, it doesn't come up yet. But they have not deleted my account yet. But I do have a Wikipedia. Now, there's no photo. Like, it's not a fancy Wikipedia page, but, like, it's got a lot of references.
I've seen far more sparse Wikipedia pages than this.
Yeah. I mean, this is, reading it, so this is what my kids give me for Father's Day. Pretty great, right?
I mean, like, to take the time and the effort, I mean, obviously it didn't cost them anything, but that's fine. You know, it's the time and the effort.
It's pretty good.
And the acknowledgement of they know who you are and what would tickle your fancy.
According to Wikipedia, I am recognized for my approachable style, versatility across formats, and extensive coverage of Minnesota news and culture.
I think that's spot on.
I also, according to a local chef who commented on my Instagram page this weekend, a tool.
Well,
which I assume he means a useful part of everybody's life that is there to solve a number of different problems.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly what he meant. Sure, absolutely, no question.
I love when people insult me under their own names, though, because
at least
I am petty enough that I'm going to do a quick search. I'm going to do a quick search, see who you are, and.
Well, I mean,
I'm not going to roast you to your employer. I'm not looking to get you fired.
No, but given the amount of petty insulting on the internet that's done under a pseudonym or under some anonymous name.
I admire it, really.
Put your name on it. All right, I'll give you credit for that, even if you're kind of a jerk.
I mean, am I insufferable? Sure, at times. Am I self-righteous? Am I a know-it-all?
Well, you sort of have to be in this job.
Yeah, of course.
That's kind of part of the bit.
A tool, though?
That seems just kind of weak.
I mean, what do we even mean?
You got to have a better insult than that.
Maybe we should do that tomorrow on the show. Text in your favorite insults for Jason DeRusha. Let's light them up. Let's go. Best insult gets two tickets to the
Absolutely
Henry Lake
nothing.
Show. Yeah, that's about it. Henry Lake is coming up next. Taylor Rivera has entered the room. The news is about to be delivered to you as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.